Welcome to Misunderstood, a podcast dedicated to better understanding MS and learning to live well with MS. I'm your host, Katie Sloan. Our usual reminders as we begin. First, I am not an expert. I'm just a person like you living with MS and trying to make the best of it. Misunderstood is based on my personal experience, what I've learned from my doctors, other care providers, and my own solutions-oriented research and pattern-finding obsession. While the majority of the information I share here has been vetted by doctors, I am not a doctor. My intention is that you use the information shared here as a springboard for discussion between you and your doctor regarding your future care options. And lastly, MS impacts each of us uniquely. I hope to shine a light on a wide range of approaches and strategies for living better with MS. But what you choose to do with that information is always your choice, and what works for one may not work for all. In our previous episode, we talked about dehydration and just how critical water is to our body's ability to properly function. I hope it motivated you to drink more water. I certainly am. Earlier this week, I co-facilitated a workshop with Dr. Peyrovi for the MS Achievement Center on goals, values, and joy. During my research for our session development, I came across a new word for me, anhedonia. The more I read about it, the more I realized just how important it is for us as people living with multiple sclerosis to be aware of it, understand what it is, why we might be feeling it, and most importantly, how to overcome it. So let's dive right in. You're likely already have experienced a period of apathy in your life where you struggled to take action on something you needed and even wanted to do. This happens to many of us immediately following our diagnosis when we're in a space of overwhelm. Well, along with apathy lives another concern that often coexists with apathy, anhedonia. And get this, they both contribute to depression and can worsen our fatigue. So, today we'll look at both apathy and anhedonia. Let's look at apathy first. Apathy is defined as a difficulty in goal-related behavior, cognitive activity, and emotional responsiveness. What does apathy look like in our lives? Well, we might struggle with starting and completing tasks and experience a lack of initiative. We might not be able to plan and execute our goals as well as we used to, and therefore not be able to achieve our goals as easily, regardless of how much we might really want to. Does this sound familiar? We might experience a flat or indifferent affect in life situations that previously evoked strong emotions. We might lose interest in people, hobbies, or events that were once a top priority for us. Apathy is quite prevalent in our community, with research stating a conservative 50% of us experiencing it at some point. When we experience apathy, a lot of things get significantly more difficult for us. We might experience difficulties in relationships that used to be easy, leading to strained relationships, a growing distance between people we care about, therefore increasing our social isolation. Loved ones may think manifestations of apathy are due to being lazy or not caring, which can lead to frustration for all parties. When fatigue is involved as well, we might try to push ourselves to overcompensate for apathy, which can backfire and trigger relapses, further compounding our struggles. We might also experience impaired daily functioning. Our executive function skills become much more challenging, making things like following through with self-care or physical therapy routines, taking medications on time, or making appointments and keeping them much more difficult. We also might struggle with implementing suggested lifestyle recommendations from our doctors or other healthcare providers and downplay their potential healing impact. With less adherence to the daily routines that help us maintain our health, when we experience apathy, it can directly contribute to the worsening of our symptoms and even further our progression. It's important to know that brain atrophy and the frontal subcortical circuits of the brain, which are critical for internal prompting of action and motivation, contribute to apathy, depression, and fatigue symptoms. It's also important to note that apathy is different from fatigue, although they often exist in tandem. Fatigue is a lack of energy, often worsened by activity, whereas apathy is a lack of motivation or interest. So it's possible to experience fatigue, yet still maintain our interest in doing something if we can access the necessary energy. On the other hand, apathy is a lack of motivation or interest. So if we experience apathy but not fatigue, we might well have the actual energy to do something, but not the desire. Apathy's cousin is anhedonia. What is anhedonia? Anhedonia is the inability to experience pleasure. It's not just experiencing low-frequency feelings or emotions, but it's a loss of interest or pleasure in activities that we once found highly enjoyable. Can you think of something you used to love doing that for some unknown reason you just can't get yourself to do? I certainly can. So what's going on here? There are two main types of anhedonia. The first is anticipatory anhedonia. This is difficulty looking forward to events we know will be pleasurable. This can manifest as a lack of motivation or an inability to initiate activities that we previously found extremely rewarding. There's also consummatory anhedonia, which is experiencing difficulties feeling pleasure when we're actually doing an activity. So even if we can motivate ourselves to participate, we still might not feel any enjoyment or satisfaction like we used to. Anhedonia is often experienced alongside apathy, depression, and fatigue, although it can be experienced on its own. All of these mental health challenges have research data that shows anhedonia affects a substantial number of people living with chronic pain and neurological conditions, including, but not limited to, MS. What are some of the impacts of anhedonia? Overall, we may feel a reduced quality of life, since feeling like we can't enjoy the things we once did can lead to significant worsening of depression. We might also experience decreased motivation, which makes it more difficult for us to set and achieve our goals. If we don't enjoy the steps along the way, we might struggle to maintain enough incentive to continue our efforts, even if our goals are very important to us. We may also struggle with following through on critical aspects of self-care, as well as struggle to maintain important social connection, resulting in withdrawal and social isolation. Since depression runs rampant in the MS community, with some research data suggesting that as many as 80% of us will struggle with depression in our lifetime, anhedonia, as a core symptom of major depressive disorder, is highly prevalent in our community. With MS specifically, anhedonia can be directly related to the neurological changes we experience over time, not solely as a psychological reaction to stress. Anhedonia is thought to be linked to dysfunction, inflammation, or even structural changes in our brain's frontal subcortical circuits. These are our reward pathways, especially those that involve dopamine and serotonin, which leads to impaired reward processing in our brains. It's really important to talk with our neurologists, mental health professionals, and primary care physicians about the symptoms of apathy, anhedonia, fatigue, and depression that we are experiencing, especially since they frequently occur together for folks in our community. This creates a vicious downward cycle of doom that can feel impossible to recover from. One symptom, such as severe fatigue, can lead to apathy, making it harder for us to do the things we know bring us joy. Once it's harder to do the things that we love that bring us pleasure, we can easily fall into anhedonia. In MS, there is growing evidence linking these types of symptoms directly to MS pathology, neurological changes, inflammation, and neurodegeneration. It's also possible that these symptoms are exacerbated by experiencing chronic pain, sleep disturbances, or even side effects from the medication we take. So, if we've experienced or are experiencing apathy and anhedonia, what can we do about it? The most important step to make is psychotherapy, the key therapy for depression that specifically targets apathy and anhedonia is behavioral activation. See episode 33, Behavioral Activation as a Tool for Health Management, for all the research and how-tos. It really does work. Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, CBT, or PQ, Positive Intelligence Mental Fitness, can help to identify and dismantle our negative thought patterns that contribute to apathy and anhedonia. There's also two therapies I hadn't heard of by name until I researched anhedonia. One, positive affective therapy, and two, savoring techniques. These therapies and techniques specifically train us to increase our positive emotions and positive lived experiences by paying attention to how we feel, helping to rebuild our ability to experience and prolong our ability to feel those positive emotions. One recommendation I love and didn't realize I already kind of do is build a pleasure practice. This entails deliberately seeking and building our ability to notice potential enjoyment. For me, this has looked like prioritizing photographing the sunset each night I'm home, walking around the garden first thing in the morning to see what new blooms have opened up, and camping outside in the backyard at least once a month. This could also look like listening to a favorite song on repeat, dancing to a playlist of invigorating music you used to love to dance to, eating a favorite food slowly and deliberately to focus on taste and textures, or anything else you love. I plan to up my game here and add more to my daily pleasure practice, like playing more games with my partner and exploring new restaurants in town. We've also talked about attending more concerts, and as a result of my research, we're going to see Social Distortion next week. What about you? What would be on your pleasure practice list? In addition to therapies, some medications like antidepressants, stimulants, or dopaminergic agents can help. These can be prescribed by a neurologist or a psychiatrist. The real good news is that there are even more things we can do today that can help alleviate symptoms of apathy and anhedonia. These include engaging in regular exercise. Even if it's adaptive and gentle, moving our bodies releases endorphins and dopamine, which directly improve our mood and motivation by activating the brain's pleasure center. Getting adequate sleep is crucial for our overall well-being and for fatigue management. Mindfulness and meditation strategies help regulate our nervous system. Some of the most powerful I've experienced are cranial sacral therapy and professional salt floats. Both are akin to pushing the restart button on our central nervous system. When I went for my monthly float after a whirlwind of a Memorial Day travel weekend, I emerged as what felt like a new person. I didn't even realize how sore and exhausted I was. Structuring our daily routines into smaller, more manageable steps also helps tremendously. In doing so, we can experience a higher likelihood of actually doing what we need to do to properly care for ourselves. When we're able to complete a task, we experience a sense of accomplishment. This acts as a flywheel and increases our motivation to do more. Sometimes, just committing to doing something for even 1 minute can change everything. Social connection helps and gives us opportunities to experience positive emotions. Finding activities and hobby groups to interact with can combat isolation and give us a stronger sense of community. Diving back into something we used to love, despite any perceived current barriers, can also help us switch off the weightiness of apathy and anhedonia. Just by trying it once, we might remember how much joy it used to bring and be further encouraged and motivated to engage more often. Never underestimate the power of doing. Anytime we turn our anguish into action, we can reignite our reward system. ensuring we have a sense of purpose. For many of us, at some point, we may lose our livelihood due to complications from MS. Making sure we find some way to contribute and maintain a sense of purpose is critical. What might you do to help yourself by helping others? There's also some lesser-known solutions worth mentioning, especially for anhedonia, like ketamine and psilocybin. These therapies are shown to have profound effects on mood and anhedonia because they target different neural pathways than traditional antidepressants. For more information, check out episode 84, Timely Tested Tools to Alleviate the Symptoms of Multiple Sclerosis, for a deeper dive into these therapies and a great book recommendation that gave me all the information I needed to educate myself enough to consider these therapies as options for myself. There's also treatments like transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, that directly stimulate the specific brain regions involved in reward processing, which offers a non-invasive way to improve the symptoms of anhedonia. There's also transcranial direct current stimulation, TDCS, and deep brain stimulation, DBS, that might also be worth consideration. Research in this area is a current focus, which is good news for us, since more recently, anhedonia is being recognized as a distinct symptom that can occur across a wide variety of conditions beyond MS, like PTSD, substance abuse disorders, and even schizophrenia. So, we can hopefully expect these efforts will yield more options for us very soon. While apathy and anhedonia can feel like a very heavy weighted blanket, impossible to get out from under, we explored another helpful tool, the post-traumatic growth inventory, somewhat recently in episode 93, as a way to identify additional healing pathways. This and other tools have helped me a lot on the road to recovery. In fact, just 2.5 years ago, I met the diagnostic criteria for PTSD. And after targeted efforts, many of which are advised for apathy and anhedonia, including PTSD-specific therapy, I was recently told that I no longer meet the diagnostic criteria for that diagnosis. That said, I do, in full transparency, sometimes still struggle with apathy, anhedonia, depression, and occasionally, if I eat off plan and skip my important daily health supporting routines, or am traveling or sick, also experience fatigue. So I'm still very much actively working on alleviating these symptoms on a daily basis to keep them as small as possible. Another helpful pathway to consider is neuroplasticity. We've addressed this in several episodes about the PQ Positive Intelligence Mental Fitness app-based program, as well as in episode 50, Writing to Heal Through Neuroplasticity Prompts. Our brains have the incredible ability to change and adapt over time. Neuroplasticity is very real, and when we support our brain's ability to heal, magical healing can happen. Data shows that apathy and anhedonia can be reversed. While it won't go away on its own, the strategies shared here can help support us as we heal. I hope this quick deep dive into apathy and anhedonia was as helpful for you as it was for me. Better understanding why we feel the way we do when we're at our lowest, and knowing there are proven ways to improve our situation and quite literally change our brains gives us agency over our lives and how we're feeling. Yes, we could choose to do nothing. But I know for me anyways, I prefer to be happy and enjoy this one life I have as much as I can. Many of these strategies have helped me in the past, and I'm excited to further incorporate some of the newer strategies into my daily routines and my recovery routines for when I fall into those lower frequency emotions in the future to build my resilience and my ability to actively cope rather than avoiding existing solution pathways. My hope today is that we all acknowledge the reality that living with MS puts us at a high risk for apathy, anhedonia, depression, and fatigue. And when experienced together, these symptoms can multiply and feel quite overwhelming. Two, that we take a moment to reflect on our own experience with apathy, anhedonia, and depression, and consider some of the healing pathways mentioned as opportunities for us to access much more joy in our one wild and precious life. And three, that we consider furthering our own research and talking with our care team about ways that we can improve our current relationship with apathy, anhedonia, and depression. To continue our conversation, you are welcome to attend our Misunderstood Flock meetings via Zoom the first Saturday of each month. That's this Saturday on June 7th. Flock members, bring your updates about your one thing you're working on this calendar year in terms of your prioritized MS-related healing. And I'd love to hear about your experience with apathy, anhedonia, and what you've tried in the past and might try moving forward to help alleviate those symptoms. Let's see how we can link arms and support one another. If you're not yet a Flock member but would like to be, please join us. We are all people living with MS from around the world that meet via Zoom monthly to support each other and continue our learning on the episode topics. We also support each other through hardships and celebrate our successes together. You can learn more and join us by visiting our Patreon page. As always, I encourage all listeners to reach out with MS-related questions, comments, future podcast topics, or guest ideas via email. And lastly, remember, as we travel through life with MS, we're certain to hit some turbulence. We'll get through it, especially if we're flying together and supporting one another and honking our encouragement. As always, thank you for listening, and until next time, be well.